Well, our next gubernatorial election is still a little while away, but we know it's going to be an open seat. John Hickenlooper will be term limited and not running again. And therefore, a lot of folks are thinking about whether they might want to be the next governor of Colorado. And some of the folks who are thinking about it are people who maybe don't have the highest name recognition in the state, but have a lot to offer this state and will certainly be known by the time the election comes around. And one of those is my current guest, Victor Mitchell. Victor and I think almost exactly the same age. Victor's in down in Castle Rock, a successful businessman who's done a lot of things in his life and looking to do something else to be governor of the state of Colorado. Good morning, Victor. Thanks for being here.
Oh, good morning, Ross. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
Before we get into politics, just give us a very brief summary of who is Victor Mitchell and what have you done?
Well, thank you very much. My name is Victor Mitchell. I'm a candidate for governor, and I have an interesting story. I came from very humble beginnings. I was raised by a disabled mother who's 90% blind and deaf. I'm a product of the public schools. I started working when I was 13 years old. I started my first company when I was 21. I've built six companies over the last 30 years, mostly here in Colorado. I've also been elected. I was a former state legislator in South Douglas and Teller counties as well. But I'm also a family man. I've been married for 27 years to my college sweetheart. We have three amazing children. And in a nutshell, that's who I am.
And what's your current business? Lead Funding, I believe, is the name. What does Lead Funding do?
Yes, my current company is basically a disruptive private financing company that displaces banks. We have close to $80 million that we have on the street today across six states. We lend to small developers, basically displacing banks, mostly small commercial developers.
And before we get into the question of the governor's race, you mentioned that you were a state rep. And as I recall, you chose not to run for re-election. I think that might be an interesting story. Can you tell us what happened there?
I get asked this all the time, and it's perfectly fair. It's a fair question to ask. You know, I believe that our founding fathers really never intended that people would go from one elected position to another, to another, to another. And I felt I could do more in the outside of government than inside of government. I guess the more important question is, what did I do after I left the legislature after one term? And the answer is I taught at two major state universities as an adjunct professor. I built one of the most successful small private companies in Colorado today. I helped my wife raise three amazing kids. And also, I was involved with a statewide effort. I led a statewide effort to defeat what would have been the largest tax increase in Colorado history. So I've been very, very active for the last 8 years, but just not in an elected position.
And just so you know, Victor, and I think you and I know each other a little bit from the leadership program at the Rockies. You know, when I ask you the question, why'd you leave the legislature after one term? Probably a lot of folks ask you that, like looking for a scandal or looking for, oh, is he a quitter? But in my mind, I'm like, he realized where productive things really happen and it's not in government. And I applaud you for that. So I'm not asking that question in a negative context, just so you're aware.
Not at all. And believe me, I mean, we have too many people that are hypersensitive and so politically correct. You can feel free to ask me anything. You can obviously tell I'm not a career politician. I'm a businessman. I'm a problem solver. That's what the essence of somebody that should run for office.
All right, so let's get into this a little bit. So you want to be governor of the state of Colorado. Why should Coloradans consider you?
Well, thank you. I mean, the biggest reason is because I can make people's lives better. I know how to look at problems differently. I know how to get along with people very well, and I know how to put forward very big, bold, different types of solutions that generally aren't discussed because so many people are in the weeds of this hyper-partisanship. We need to be able to get past the partisanship and actually put forward big ideas, whether it's on health services, whether it's getting rid of a great deal of the many regulations that we have in our state that are stifling innovation, hurting people from earning more money in a modern economy. STEM education is another one. I mean, we're not even talking about the fact that only one in four kids in Colorado graduate with a STEM degree. We have three times as many jobs available today as qualified kids that are graduating. We need to encourage our kids to do bigger than themselves.
So let's talk about an issue, one of the biggest issues of the past legislative session, and something we've talked about a lot on this show. And in fact, on your website, which I'll mention to listeners, vic4gov, V-I-C, the number 4, G-O-V.com, vic4gov.com. The second issue on the page, and it's really the first issue because the previous little video is about your own experience, is transportation. So we've spent a lot of time talking about how do we fix the roads in Colorado. My radio colleague, John Caldera, has a concept, fix our damn roads, meaning you don't get another penny of our money, you go fix our roads with the money you've already got. Other folks, including some Republicans, have suggested substantial tax hikes. There's probably something kind of in between now with this hospital provider fee shift. What is your view on the transportation, specifically the road situation in Colorado?
Well, the roads are a mess. I mean, there's no question about it. We have failing infrastructure, whether it's our roads, our bridges, our highways. This was actually one of the few times that I actually disagree with my friend John Caldera. I don't believe we should be hitting the voters up for a $2.5 billion trans bond or any type of a tax increase that some of my opponents have supported in a combination of a tax increase or a trans bond. That doesn't mean we don't need more funding for roads. We will certainly do. Let me just share you one area that we could save money and reallocate money to roads without raising taxes or issuing new bonds. There's an obscure committee in the legislature, in the General Assembly, called the Legislative Audit Committee. If we just change the mandate of that committee from financial to performance auditing, meaning that instead of just verifying whether all the assets and liabilities are accounted for, we actually bring in outsiders, experts, or independent auditors who don't work for government and come in and say, you know, we could save, you know, you can go from 100 employees to 20 employees if you develop this type of information systems. And then we can actually take the partisan out of it. We save just 3.5% by changing that mission of that committee. That's $1 billion a year that could go to roads and infrastructure without increasing taxes or incurring any new bonds. That's just one area. But with respect to transportation, I think we should have a 20-year plan. We've never had a plan like that in the history of Colorado where we actually work with local municipalities and discover what they need over a long period of time. We're just not even thinking about it, our problems in the right context. One-third of CDOT's current budget, of roughly $500 million a year, is being wasted in going to general administrative expenses. They have a $1.5 billion budget. One-third of it goes to G&A. That's just too much. They have 3,300 employees. The current executive director is basically a career bureaucrat. He's never worked in the private sector. That's exactly the wrong type of leadership that's needed for our roads. I think we need to fix the system, do more with less, and then if we need to be, look at more money coming down the road. But there's much waste in our current state government that we could do a lot more.
If you have a question, I would take maybe one or two listener questions for Victor Mitchell, candidate for governor. If you want to ask a question, 303-713-8255, 713-TALK. Victor, another issue regarding the state budget has to do with how much Democrats and John Hickenlooper have expanded Medicaid in the state of Colorado, and if and when the federal government cuts back on their match, this thing is going to blow up the state budget, but very few people have the courage to say we need to actually reduce the number of people on Medicaid. I'm calling for that, but I'm not running for anything. What's your position?
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. We need to, you know, just so your listeners fully understand the gravity of the situation, since 2010, Medicaid expenditures has increased in Colorado by more than $600 million. I think something like $643 million in 7 years. I mean, it's an extraordinary explosion. And Medicaid, by the way, is not reimbursable or not eligible for many people, because what happens is people will go to a doctor, they won't accept Medicaid reimbursements. Let me share you what we could do much more cost effectively. There's something called, there's clinics, primary care clinics available all around the country today that are providing extraordinarily diverse care through nurse practitioners. They're generally NGOs or nonprofits, and they're able to provide very high quality care, most especially in rural parts of our country, without even the need for insurance. That can be done much more cost effectively and much more, with a much higher quality of care than Medicaid. We could be using block grants from the state of Colorado to provide and open up these types of clinics. But yes, I believe we should pull out of the exchange. The exchange has been an abstract failure. And this current governor, I mean, he really has two legacies, lots and lots of traffic and even more pot. And that's his legacy. I mean, he's been a failed governor, and Medicaid is just one more example of that.
Very quickly, because I do think we've got some folks on the line who want to ask you some questions. Another issue on your website, you talk about marijuana tax revenue. You just mentioned both marijuana and money. What are your quick thoughts on marijuana tax revenue? And if you have any broader thoughts on the expansion of the use of marijuana recreationally in the state of Colorado, I'd be interested in hearing that, too.
Well, let's talk about marijuana. I mean, if you talk to just about every superintendent in Colorado, almost every superintendent of a school district in Colorado, they all say the same thing. The money's being ripped off. We've been promised a lot more money than what actually is coming in. I think first and foremost, within 30 days after I swear on the Bible and take the oath of office, we need to have a full website in real time where every Coloradan can go and look at exactly what money's coming into the state for marijuana and where it's exactly going. And it should be done with accountability, public scrutiny, and accountability. First and foremost, that's job number one when it comes to marijuana. Number two is I think we need a lot more public awareness led by the governor's office to talk about THC and the toxicity of marijuana. I didn't approve of Amendment 64, but Coloradans did. And I think we should uphold the law, even the laws we don't like. So that's generally where I stand with marijuana. But first and foremost, we need to get the money that's being ripped off into our schools and roads, where right now no one really knows where that money's going.
Let's grab some listener calls. We'll start with Bruce. Good morning, Bruce. You're on the show with Ross Kaminsky and with gubernatorial candidate Victor Mitchell. What's your question for Victor?
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity. Right now, residences move into a city, they have to pay a water tap fee to cover the capital cost for the expense they're putting on the system. I think we should do the same with our roads. Denver's added 100,000 people and not built 1 mile of road. And to me, there's no...
So, Bruce, just make this quick here. Do you have a question rather than a statement?
Yeah. Would you support an impact fee on new residences in congested traffic areas to pay for roads?
Thank you, Bruce.
I'd have to think about that, but probably not. But I appreciate the question. Let me tell you about the gas tax. It's one of the most regressive in Colorado. You know, if you drive an F-150 and you live in Denver or you live in Pueblo and you use that truck for work, you're probably paying $200-$300 a week in fees and taxes to fund our roads. If you own a Tesla and you live in Wash Park, you pay nothing. I mean, it's a terribly regressive structure the way we currently fund our roads, and the gas taxes, frankly, I think are a bad idea. I think we need to do away eventually with the gas tax and go to something with radio frequency technology where people's odometers can be read in real time once a month without having any idea where they're going, where they've been, or anything like that, and pay a per fee per mile. That would be a much more equitable solution. The liberals go crazy over that. They claim, oh, this is an intrusion of our privacy and what have you, which is not true at all. But right now, so many people, especially wealthy liberals that are driving these, you know, battery-funded cars, are basically using our roads for free.
All right, let's take another call. Let's go to Steve. Good morning, Steve. You're on the show. What's your question for Victor Mitchell?
Hi, good morning. So my question is more about, like, criminal reform. And with that, I know, you know, 90% of the people, you know, there's a lot of people think that criminals just, they go to prison, they get out, they commit more crimes. And to an extent, that's true. But there's a big percentage of people that go to prison and actually change their life and try to do better.
So what's your question, Steve?
Well, so my question is, you know, what would you do to make... you know, to make things more accessible for that percentage of people that is trying to change their life. Like for me, I was in prison and this has been 4 years and I still, you know, like if I try to rent an apartment, I get turned down just because I'm a felon. And it's like, you're basically stamped for life.
All right, Steve. Steve, we get it. Very good. So just in the interest of time, thank you for the question, Steve. And Victor, what are your thoughts? I think this is actually quite an interesting and important issue.
No, I'd say so, too. And thank you for sharing your story. I mean, recidivism is an enormous problem because every time somebody that comes out of prison, we want to make sure that they're reformed in such a way that they don't have any perverse incentives where they could recommit and ultimately go back to prison. It obviously costs the state taxpayers a great deal of money to house criminals. So we want people that have made mistakes in their lives to become reformed and enter back into society. We don't want to create mechanisms where it's just impossible for them to get a job or to be successful, even though that they've made previous mistakes. Most of the time, the most successful outcomes have been for prisoners have been people through nonprofits that generally hire them in a nonprofit, knowing full well that they have criminal histories and try to go through certain types of training. But many prisoners, you're absolutely right, are stuck and they can't go back into society. It's very difficult for them to find new jobs. So that's a difficult issue that I can't quickly solve or know enough about today to give you a better answer than that. But it's something that should be taken very seriously.
Thank you very much for that question. And let's take one more listener question. We'll make this from Mike. Good morning, Mike. You're on. What's your quick question for Victor Mitchell?
All right, Victor, I got a quick question for you on transportation. Ritter created a bill that raised our car registration a lot of money, and that money was supposed to go to roads and bridges. My question has that ever been audited? Is it going to be audited? And if that money's not going to the roads and bridges from this registration that raised our rates tremendously, then what is your plan to make sure that money's going to roads and bridges, but not is it going to be refunded back to taxpayers?
We've got about 90 seconds for your answer, Victor. Thanks for the question, okay. Mike.
Well, thanks very much. I mean, I'm not familiar with whether we're auditing those funds or not, but it certainly sounds like another bureaucratic steal that the government charges people these extraordinary new user fees, all in the spirit of more roads, and many times it just goes to public unions and waste and inefficiency. Yes, it should be audited. Yes, we should not only be looking at where the money goes, but how we can do more with less.
Victor Mitchell, I thank you very much for your time this morning. I actually have one final question for you. So at this point, your name is not well known around the state of Colorado. How are you going to get your name well known around the state of Colorado when you'll be up against some people, probably no very famous candidates, but some people better known than you?
There's no question. I mean, I don't know if your listeners are aware, I have to beat both a Bush and a Romney and a trial lawyer to win. So it's going to be a daunting task. But I can tell you right now, we're working at this 10 hours a day. We have over $3 million we've already raised or I've contributed. We're doing 2 to 3 events every day. We have over 12,000 followers and like on Facebook, far more than any other candidate. The campaign is both high tech and grassroots, and our message of actually doing more with less, getting regulations off the backs of small business owners, creating more entrepreneurship seems to be really resonating. But there's no question, everything in my life has been difficult, and I welcome that. I welcome the adversity and I welcome the challenge. But there seems to be a real appetite for somebody like myself, who's a proven entrepreneur and businessman, outsider, to come in and lead our next state, or lead our state forward.
Well, to my listeners, if you're interested in learning more about Victor, his website, vic4gov, so V-I-C, the number 4, G-O-V, .com, vic4gov.com. I think your Twitter handle's the same?
My Twitter handle's the same, and you can go to my Facebook as well. Just go Victor Mitchell for governor, and you can find us there as well. Please like us and follow us, and we often broadcast on Facebook Live. So I really appreciate you giving me the opportunity to come on your show, and I hope I'll have another time down the road as well as the campaign progresses.
I'm sure we'll talk again, Victor. Thank you very much for your time this morning.